Committee meeting to order. The first, do you guys do Board of Control, Dave? Do you guys do Board of Control? Okay. So we will have the Committee of the Whole, Boards and Commission interviews. The first person is the Planning Commission, Adam Stevens. Adam, if you come up to the podium, give your name, address, and tell us a little bit of why you want to serve on this committee.
Okay. Hello. I'm Adam Stevens. I live at 386 Wilson Avenue. Why do I want to serve on this committee? Well, I've long been interested in local government and wanting to get more and more engaged. I had a really great experience on the Charter Review Commission. I've considered running for council. I have not gotten quite there yet, but when I was talking to Jeff, he suggested that this would be a good opportunity to learn more about the community, more about the city, and how the inner workings are. So.
Great. Anybody have any questions? No? Thank you. Oh, Heidi.
So thank you for applying. We really appreciate it. So tell me, do you have any experience in any kind of building, looking at plans? Because a lot of it is going to be like an enforcing regulations, things like that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I would say no, I don't have any experience with it. You know, I like to say I'm a lifelong learner, so I'm excited to learn more about that process and how I can contribute. But no, I don't have any direct experience.
But it doesn't make your eyes glaze over.
No.
Just wondering, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I work in computers professionally, so nothing like that. But yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Further questions? Okay, thanks, Adam. Right. Appreciate it. Well, I'm sorry, Tracy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, the question was, am I going to have the time? I do have the time to dedicate to this. Yes. And I looked, I think it's what a multi-year appointment, right?
Yeah. So. Further? Thanks, Adam. And we will be making our voting on this at our March 18th meeting. So,
okay. Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. The next is Civil Service Commission, Mariah Taylor. Mariah, your address, please, and why you would like to serve on this commission.
My address is 530 Vine Street. I come from governance. I'm actually the senior internal auditor at the University of Akron. I served on the governance board at Kent State for 3 years, staff council. So I'm used to a lot of the policies and regulations and things of that nature. I just left there after 7 years, and now it's been 30 days that I'm at the university. And so I just want to give back personally to my community. And I think this will just be a really good avenue. And I think it aligns a lot with my resume. Like I said, I come from regulation and making sure policies are enforced based off of documented standards instead of, you know, just outside enforces. And so I was really interested and I applied.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? All right. Heidi?
I just want to give a hearty thank you for applying for this. This is a very important committee that sometimes we have difficulty filling.
Thank you. You
are one of my constituents.
Thank you, Heidi. I appreciate it.
Yeah. On Vine Street. Mm-hmm.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Oh.
I just wanted to comment that, like, your background and experience is perfectly tailored to this mm-hmm. responsibility. So, yeah, thank you again for applying. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to letting you know soon.
Thank you, Benjamin. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, Darlene Rocco. Darlene, your address, please, and why you want to serve on this commission.
Absolutely. Good evening, everyone. Darlene Rocco, 288 Whetstone Drive. I'm interested in this commission. I started last year. I was part of the Charter Review Commission, and just it was a very enlightening and fulfilling experience, and it just sparked an interest in me to get a little bit more involved in my local community. So really just trying to find ways that fit into my experience, and my experience is 20 plus years of executive leadership in the healthcare industry. I currently lead a quality committee, or excuse me, a quality department that is really focused on developing policies, procedures across a very large organization to ensure compliance and standardization. Also deal a lot with regulatory bodies, so I'm very familiar with, you know, federal and state regulations.
Questions? Ben?
Yeah, thank you for your application. And I see that you have two choices. You also put as a second choice Board of Health. Right. And I just wanted to hear, usually we get applicants that just choose one. So having that second option, I wanted to hear, like, is that a far second, or are you also genuinely interested in Board of Health?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. I think I'm genuinely interested in both.
Okay.
And again, it's really just finding a way that I can participate in my local government, wanting to be able to support my community. I think especially now with our current climate, I think it's important for all of us to get as involved as we can, especially at that local level. And I feel my experience would fit either quite well.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Robert Hamer. Address, please, and why you would like to serve on this committee.
All right. Good evening, everybody. I'm Robert Hamer. Address is 1086 Monroe Falls, Kent Road. The reason I want to serve on this committee is I've spent nearly 30 years of my career working in human resources, personnel, dealing with government relations and stuff, serving on various committees and stuff. I was on Planning Commission and also did Prairie Township JED Board when I was down near Columbus, as well as being in both public and private sector, corporate and private companies. And the reason that I was interested in this the most was I wanted to take those skills and take those abilities and try to translate those to being able to give back to my community and give back service to supporting the community where I live. We've raised our kids here. We want to continue to see things get better. And one of the things that's always been very important to me is to ensure transparency of government, to make sure that there is fair and equitable treatment and merit-based systems. And I think there's a lot of challenges right now when it comes to that. And I think my experience in dealing with quasi-judicial situations and being able to manage those type of environments makes me uniquely suited to being able to support the community in this role.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Heidi?
Yeah, similar to what Ben asked the previous candidate. You have a second choice listed as Design and Preservation Committee. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to your interest in that, please?
Yeah, so again, my interest is very much to be part of the community and look for ways in which that we can continue to grow and try to make this a great place to live, work, to be a place where people want to raise their families. And so as I was looking at different boards and commissions and stuff, that was one that I thought actually had a pretty unique interest to me. And so I decided that that is an option as well.
And I see you have some Home Depot experience.
Yes,
but I'm trying to get at if you have anything you could bring to the table for the Design and Preservation Committee in particular.
More or less just I've been involved in a lot of community events and a lot of community development programs and stuff. So that would be the biggest thing that I would be able to bring. I've served with committees that have been doing different fundraisers for various projects, be it whether it's universities building, you know, monuments, or whether it's we work with Raise Across America organization, in which we do a lot of sponsorships for veterans reads and community service projects like that is really what drove me that direction.
Well, thank you very much.
Further questions from anyone at council? Thank you very much, Mr. Hamer.
Thank you.
As I said, we will be making a decision at the March 18th City Council meeting. And thank you all for applying. We really appreciate it. Well, the next person on the agenda is Dana Lawless to give us a Kent State University update.
We try to bring Dana back in a couple times a year, and I guess she was worried, so she brought security with her this time. No, we're delighted to have him, and she'll introduce him, but it's good to see you, Dana.
It's great to be here, and this is my first time in front of this new council, and I'm very, very excited, and I'll talk more about what I do in my role, but I know you'd rather hear from this amazing person here. So I'm very excited to introduce to you Ivory Kendrick, who is our undergraduate student government president, a local graduate from Ravenna, part of our Upper Bound programs. This is one of your candidates who just talked, but I won't get into that. This is very excited about that I've known for 20 years because I don't age. But it's very exciting because our students are just amazing. And Ivory works for the health department and has done great things. And really, I think, would love to see stronger connections. I think some of this came from some of your reach out, Chris. So let me go ahead and give the floor to Ivory.
Oh my gosh, Dana's hyping me up. All right. Yes, as Dana said, my name is Ivory Kendrick. I am a public health major with a minor in political science. I was elected to be the student body president back in May 2025. Oh my gosh, time's flying. And I am a graduating senior. But yes, but the real reason I came today is that on behalf of the undergraduate student government and the student body at Kent State University, I would just like to extend a hand to the council and just open the door for collaboration. So for far too long on Kent State's main campus, students have really seen a dichotomy between Kent State and the city of Kent, even though we're two sides of the same coin, instead of one whole entity. So that's why I'm here today, to show the council that the students at Kent State are here to stand, to not only receive their education, but also to further the city and the community that we've come to know and love. So, with that being said, together, I truly do think that we can do so much for the city, and we could, you know, work together to further our culture, belonging, and most importantly, our community. So I would ask that every single one of you, if you'd like to collaborate in the future and you'd like to work together, to please reach out. The students are definitely willing. And I just think that together we can push Kent State as a community, not only as a city of Kent, but also like as the students and the residents as a whole. But thank you.
Thank you.
To be quick here, but are there any questions or anything? I don't know if I'm allowed to ask that.
Sure.
Or
yeah. Yeah. Any questions? Tracy?
Yes. So if you go on, we actually have a website. So if you go to, you got that? Okay. She has that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't want to be prescriptive of the things that we need. I'd also like to revert it back to you and your fellow students and like come to us with ideas. You know, I don't know the skill sets that are at hand. Like, what are you interested in? Like, I think that generally we'd be very interested in hearing those ideas and then responding to those too. So let's do a back and forth.
Yeah. I'd love to have a meeting. I have like literally like five people on speed dial right now that would love to meet with the city and just like get some ideas flowing. So I got you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Chris?
I'd love for you to talk about some of the work you've been doing on campus. What have you been spearheading? What are you most proud of? What are you working on now?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So as of recent, as a fall semester, we actually passed a proposal to change the weather policy on campus. So my classes close a little bit more. I drafted up a proposal policy and I sent it to the provost and had their team look over it. And we got the threshold for when classes close a little bit better. So instead of doing negative 20 degrees flat, it is now negative 15 wind chill. And as some of you may know, wind chill is different than the actual temperature because of how your body perceives it. So now we've actually had like, I think it's like four classes that have closed in addition to like any other year. So that was a major success. We've also introduced a new student representative for adult and veterans. So that way we have more representation on campus for adult and veteran students. I'm trying to think what else. We also did an advocacy trip to talk about Senate Bill 1 this year. A lot. I'm trying to think. I have so many people. I have like 27 people I got to keep track of. So I'm trying to think of everything we did. But I think those two things are probably the ones that are close and near dear to my heart, because a lot of students have advocated against, you know, the weather thing. And in addition to that, I love having representation for a community that may not always be represented.
I just want to say congratulations. I've personally seen your leadership and the way that your fellow students are watching you and following you. And so we're there with them, watching and following. So thank you.
Robin?
Yes. First off, thank you for taking up the banner to try to move us forward as a community. You had mentioned in your initial remarks that you view some dichotomies that exist between city and the university. Tell those out a little better so we get an idea of exactly what you're seeing.
Yeah. And, So we actually just had a community event recently where we had like students, faculty, and staff come to the table. And we kind of talked about this a little bit, where students feel as if, you know, the only time they really go downtown or really get to enjoy the community is when they're buying something, you know, and that's, I hate to say that, but it's the truth. I feel like a lot of students, they really don't see a purpose to going downtown whenever like they have just free time or something. They just prefer to stay on campus. And I'd love to kind of flip that, you know, that stigma and that mentality, because as someone who's lived in Portage County all of his life, I truly believe that one of the best parts about the city of Kent is its community. Like, I like being able to walk down to a coffee shop, be able to talk to the barista. I like being able to see someone that I, for some reason, only see like on the side of the road, but I'll just be like, hey, what's going on, man? Like, what's going on, Fred? I think having that community and that sense of like, okay, I belong here, not only would it help students' academic side, but also help the city of Kent, especially making more of a unity and more of a thing to stand behind. Yeah, because I feel like a lot of students have that just, I'm here for an education, I want to go home. But a lot of them end up falling in love with Kent, the city of Kent, and having that love will further them more and have them stay here and be able to give back to the community.
So then your expectation is what by
I think
what you see as a university individual and what the city could be doing.
I
bring that to realization.
I think to make them come to realization, I think a lot more events that aren't, I guess more events that are more for the sake of the good, not for the sake of like produce. I know we had an event when convocation ended where we went downtown and got to explore all the shops and stuff like that. Like that, I would love to see that, but more like community events, like more going to Kent services, social services, and volunteering, having more students get involved with like their local NAACP or stuff like that, because I think building that network and those connections would really help.
Thank you.
Of course.
Ivory, I am more than willing to come on campus anytime and talk with students and become active in anything you need me to be or to do, and I would be glad. I won't even tell you how many years ago, I graduated from Kent State University, fell in love with this town. My wife and I raised our kids here. I've been on city council for 17 years, going on 18 now as mayor, and I will do anything that you need me to do to go and to talk to students or to appear at different things or anything you need me to do, I'm more than glad to do.
Okay, awesome. I'll get your contact information.
Sure.
Dana. Any other questions?
Me.
Yes.
So part of the reason I'm sitting in this chair is because I often talk to Kent State students saying, I think that there is a disconnect between our city and Kent State. So we need to chat because we absolutely need our Kent State students in our communities representing not only Kent State, but our city as well. So need to have a chat. I can help you. Do you know something off the top of your head that you'd want to perhaps do something small, maybe to get your feet wet, like a group of students, something to at least try, and you can take it back and say, we did this with the city, let's do more.
Yeah, I know me and Dana kind of talked about this, but I know potentially getting a lot more students involved with the local high schools.
Yes,
and like 100%. Even if it's something as small as like, even if we had like a river day or something like that, having like students from Kent come facilitate that and get to talk about their experiences going to college, or just even just being there to support, I think that would be a good idea.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I don't know how to follow that. I mean, that's like way cool. So
yeah,
thank you.
He got a round of applause. So
I mean, I know. What's she gonna say? No, I'm just kidding. In all seriousness, thank you. We're excited. When Ivory reached out, we've talked about this for a couple months, just trying to figure out the right time to get here. And with, you know, I think this is the largest transition in council for some time. And so Dave and I thought March would be great, and it's worked out. And so we're excited. What I'm asking is to work through Dave and I, it's simply only because Ivory's term will end, and we don't want this to end. So we thought we could help make sure that we can stay connected and keep this going. The beautiful thing, and also the challenge of our student leaders, is they graduate, as much as we want to keep them forever. And we don't want to lose some of this momentum. So my information, Dave has, so we can make sure we keep this going and also plug in wherever it might make sense. So as Dave mentioned, I get the opportunity two or three times a year to come before this body to provide university updates. And since we do have some newer council folks, I wanted just to briefly let you know who I am and what my office does. So I'm Dana Wallace-Andrick. I've been a part of the Kent State community since 2002 full time. Yeah, long time. I know. I was born here. What are you talking about? I'm a proud two-time graduate, used to live in Kent. In 2020, during a pandemic, as one does, the president and provost said, do you want to build this new area to build stronger relationships and serve as a liaison for the surrounding community and the university? And so that's how it started. We've done great work together. We have the downtown to show for that, as well as a lot of other things, but there's relational tissue that goes along with it. And also recognizing sometimes you just need a person to navigate this large university system. And that was really the goal of my office. So there's a couple things that I want to make sure council knows. I serve as the liaison, so you can start with me and I'll get you to where you need to go. If you have ideas, if you have a challenge, we have noise complaints. It's a mixed thing. Whatever it is, it starts with me. Sometimes I manage it, sometimes someone else does. We also manage a listserv. When I came into this role, one of the things I heard from the community was communication was an issue. Businesses didn't know when graduation was happening. And all of a sudden, you have hundreds of people showing up to eat, and they're like, I didn't staff for this. And so something as simple as an email listserv, I think it all was sent to you, but if not, if you would like to join it, we really try to only send out relevant Kent State information, high-level pieces, but we do send things out like when's graduation, spring break, for example, is next week, just some of those key pieces, personnel changes, Board of Trustees actions and such. We have quarterly meetings. The mayor is there, Dave, several of these great folks that I get to work with, and our university leadership to really just ensure communication is strong, to ensure that we are listening to each other, talking about common issues, what are opportunities to grow together, and we do those quarterly. I also manage updates with all of you like this, and then whatever kind of things are needed. So the president will say, Dana, I have this idea. And then I call Dave, or Dave will say, this came out in my meeting with Todd. And there's a fun little project that we're exploring now. And so it's a mix of things. And I just love it. It's been a real joy. The first year I was doing COVID testing with Joan. I mean, it's one of those things where whatever is needed is what we do, because that's the community and that's what's important. So with that said, I do want to give you some university updates. First, just want to talk a little bit about enrollment. We continue to see challenges in enrollment that are not unique to Kent State whatsoever. But I do like council to know this, because we know one of the top three reasons, and Ivory hit this so well, folks choose Kent State is because of our community. And so we have these great events. They're called Flashes Fridays, where future flash days, where we see our families come, and it's families making the decision to choose Kent State. We've been very intentional to make connections to downtown on those days, but we really need all of your help as much as possible. With those days get sent out, you can come onto campus, be a part of those days. We drive folks down to the visitor center, but enrollment is really, we are so symbiotic and we rely on each other so much. So we welcome, you know, those ideas, because enrollment is going to continue to be a challenge. In this climate, I can talk about that. We can do a whole session about that. I won't belabor it here, but we're down about 2%. We're still very strong. We're very fiscally sound, but those are challenges that are very real. Graduate enrollment is also a really big factor too that we're considering, as well as international enrollment, which continues to shift based on geopolitical context, as you can imagine. Also, I wanted to mention that we continue to work together on some of those events that Ivory talked about. So we collaborate, we work with Eric and Dom and others with the Chamber, Main Street Kent, on the Big Flashes First Friday, where we brought literally, I think, every first year student to downtown Kent. We're going to do it again. It's the first Friday before classes start. We'd love to see you all there. They love to see you. Even if they took Ivory's point, if they don't know you, they should know you. So we'll get that information to you. We also started a community orchestra concert last year. Our orchestra director brought the orchestra to Hometown Bank, and it was amazing. I would love to see all of council there next year. It was a test drive. It's, I think, the third Sunday in September. But to Ivory's point, we'd love to do more of those events and welcome your ideas. The MAC championship tournaments next week. Both our women and men's team are going to be playing, so wish them well. We are doing really well with sports. Baseball is doing great, gymnastics. We have a lot of theater productions. One just ended. I share that out on the listserv. Just again, just take advantage of what's in your backyard. Okay, some university updates I'll quickly go through. Board of Trustees met today, so this is fresh off the press. The press release hasn't even gone out yet. Well, it might have by now, but you may have heard that they extended our president's contract by 1 year. So Todd will be here through June 30, 2029. And I think that's really important for council to know as it relates to steady leadership. It relates to how our board trusts and believes in his leadership, especially because the university has been going through a lot of change. A lot of that change has been tied to our T28 plan, which you may have heard about, where we're doing major academic restructuring. The board approved the next stage of that. So colleges, both the degree granting and non-degree granting are reorganizing. It is an administrative restructure, and I'm happy to answer any of those questions. But anytime you go through a major change, there's always lots of misinformation and people aren't sure about different things. So if you have any questions, please let me know. In essence of time, I won't go into all of that, but I will share the press release, which does detail this out, as well as new academic programs based on growth, a lot of those in aeronautics and engineering. Also, I think many of you know Nick Katozzi, who's been a great friend to the city, has moved on, and we just recently appointed his new successor, who ironically is a Nick with an Italian last name. Nick Ciafani is the new Nick. He started literally on Monday, and so we're working to get a meeting scheduled with Dave and others. He's our new government relations executive director, so we're happy to have him on board. I think you may have seen too our vice president and CIO, chief information officer, John Rotchke, and I know we do some shared services work. He has moved on, which we're sad to see him go, but someone who's been with Kent State for a very long time, Jim Raver, is his interim, but that will be a search coming up as well. You may have also heard that the Schwartz building on campus has been leased to the Biomed STEM Academy. We're incredibly excited about this. I really believe that, and Todd talked about this at the board today, that you're going to see much more of these things happen with the future of higher education. And I think it's where we should go. You know, we really are a public-facing entity. So how do we meet needs in the community? So if you have any questions, I am the liaison for that as well, and I'd be happy to answer those. And then lastly, I know Dave and I have talked quite a bit about this. We know housing remains a priority for the council, and we continue to be a partner in exploring what that might look like and what are some opportunities. And then just some dates coming up. As I mentioned, next week is spring break, and then classes conclude on May 3rd. We will commemorate May 4 as we do each year, and I'll send those details out. And then spring commencements are planned Thursday, May 7th through Sunday, May 10th. And then finally, back to Ivory's point, if you are interested in any sort of partnership, connecting, happy to help facilitate and make that happen. So that's what I have. Any questions?
Ivy?
So do you see any potential intergenerational village occurring on campus in the next, or is it dead? Has it been talked about? What's going on with Allerton area?
So I've recently been asked to chair a Allerton exploration project. Literally, we have not met yet. So your question's very timely. I don't think anything's off the table at this point, and I don't think anything has been decided either. So we are exploring because we know that there is interest and opportunities for all sorts of things. So I would say stay tuned, and maybe by my next update to council, I'll know a bit more. Or as we know more even sooner, we'll make sure we get that to council.
Thank you. I think that there are a lot of older people that are interested in staying in Kent and would love to have an opportunity to be on campus.
Yeah.
And, you know, really participate directly in the offerings that the university has to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Dana, can I ask, there's been a number of comments about sort of connecting resources with needs in the community. I recall Ann Goski used to be like fierce at that. She was a small in stature, big in impact woman. Yes. And I don't know, is that service still provided? Where, because she did all kinds of work with people that needed labor. And so she'd round up students and take them over, and they'd fix roofs and drain pipes and rake yards. And and it was bigger than that. I mean, there was a whole lot. I just wondered, it seemed like, I don't hear that. I don't see Ann as much. So I didn't know what the status of that is.
Great question. So some of you may know Craig Berger, who's been active in the community. He is now on Leadership Portage County's board, and he's our associate director who oversees those efforts. There was recently a reorganization, so that's probably why you haven't heard a ton, because our student life area just reorganized, came under a new name. And so that has really folded into a larger civic engagement initiative. And they've been using this year to really establish voter registration, service learning, connecting volunteer opportunities to community needs and students. So I will get more information, but that does exist. It's a very robust area that is going through kind of they just came up under a new name that I'm not going to try to tell you because I'll say it wrong. So I'll get you the right name. But yes, that's a key piece. It's an important part of what we do. Also, last Wednesday, this was something that came out of the business community. The chamber hosted an internship lunch. As we were hearing from the businesses, they wanted to know how to better reach Kent State students for jobs and internships. So we had a luncheon with the chamber at BW3's where our internship coordinator came, our career exploration and development, to make sure local businesses knew how to access. So honestly, we probably have not done a good enough job with that. We tend to have these huge fairs where, you know, like Progressive comes in and Ernst & Young. And here in our backyard, it's just how do we make that happen? And we did that last week.
Further questions? Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, the next topic on our agenda are city staff updates. And Angela, do you want to start?
Angela's going to talk a little bit about, and she's the point person because by default, her service areas may end up using it, but it has to do with the future of the church property that we purchased. So she's got a team of folks behind her and other departments too, Melanie and others, But I said, since you're kind of like, everyone's excited to see what you might be able to do in the facility, maybe if you would take the lead. And so she's here to update that.
Good evening. So I have a very brief update, just to catch everybody up to speed, on the facility at 319 South DePeyster, which is the former Kent Church of Christ. Council, as all of you, I believe, are aware, voted to purchase that property. I believe that was the end of November, before the end of the year. And the big question was, what is the city going to do? How are they going to utilize that space in the best way possible? It's a difficult question to answer, having never stepped foot inside of that space, but I was finally able to do so just about a month ago. One thing is for certain, and that building does need quite a bit of work, just to bring it up to code and to make necessary repairs to make it a usable space for the public. It's my understanding there are meetings taking place with contractors present day to get costs put together. Those costs will come back before you to get your input to see what direction council would like to go. At that time, once we learn what the costs are going to be to bring that building up to where we can use it, it's really difficult to say exactly how we envision using that space. We have a lot of ideas because there's a lot of potential, but I think getting some of those answers and knowing how much that's going to cost to kind of modify that space, and how much the city's willing to allocate towards that, that's going to determine, I think, the best use of that space. So we've been talking about additional recreational and educational programming going in that space. We've also talked about adding that to the city's inventory as another rental space, because that's always in high demand. We have two indoor rental spaces currently, and they're booked 13 months in advance, pretty much at all times on Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. So we hear that a lot, that there's not a lot of rental space for showers and meetings, graduation parties, retirement parties, things of those nature. So that's another option that could generate a little bit of revenue, especially on the weekends. And then we've also entertained relocating some of our existing programs that are taking place at other facilities and possibly moving them over to 319 South DePeyster and then freeing the spaces in the locations where those are currently taking place. So there's work being done behind the scenes, but there's still a lot yet to be determined that we're getting answers to.
Okay. For those that weren't on council, when we purchased the building, Hope was able to negotiate a lower price in part because we said we had contractors go through the building, and we anticipated anywhere between 50 and 100,000. Maybe we were generally saying 75. We picked in the middle to kind of take care of the entrance and exits are not really disability accessible. I mean, they are, but they're not great. Bathrooms need work. They're kind of dysfunctional. There's a chimney issue. It's kind of just, that's what she's speaking of, sort of the foundational issues. These have to be taken care of. Then once those get satisfied, you come back to you and she's got ideas and she could say, well, if you want to do this kind of activity in there, it'll be these things and it'll cost this much. Or if you want to do this, it could be this. So those extra ones, sort of the real refined numbers, aren't going to come for a while. We got to take care of just the basics, and then we'll kind of circle back.
Any questions for Angela?
Ben? Functionally, are we talking about a two-floor structure, or is it really just that one main floor?
It does have two floors, and I'm including the basement. And we need really an expert to kind of chime in on this, because in our opinion, we don't believe that basement's going to be accessible to the public. So it would just be the main floor.
Okay. Tracy?
Unfortunately, it's in the basement.
Heidi?
Yeah, one of the things that we talked about was some senior programming. Is that potential possible?
Yes. Yes, that is possible. And that is something, depending on the accessibility upgrades made to that building, that is something that we're entertaining relocating other things into that building and freeing up one of our other spaces that might be more suitable for older adults.
Thank you.
Tracy? Chris?
I thought there was a choir loft.
There is.
Okay. But that doesn't count as a full second floor.
I would not count that as a floor because I don't think we would be able to program anything there. It's very small.
And also about parking, can you remind us how many spots are there?
I believe 18.
Okay, thanks.
Chrissy?
This kind of, it's about the building, but I don't know if you can answer these questions. When we tried to buy that building before, we couldn't give them a price where they would be able to move. Did they find another building, or is it just, did the church close? They put it for sale?
They joined another denomination because they were getting to be such a small denomination. They joined another, and I think it might be in Ravenna that they moved to.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Thanks, Angela.
Thank you.
Melanie?
Not as big as I thought it was going to be. I just wanted to take a moment of council's time this evening. Many of you know, probably all of you know, we have an emergency interconnect with the city of Ravenna. It's located at the intersection of Powder Mill and Summit. On the map there, you can see the little red dot. Thank you. That's where it's located. To the right there or to the east, it goes to Ravenna, and to the left or to the west, it goes down Summit Street and then up Hodgman to our water plant. We have a contractual agreement between the two cities that was done in 2002. Once that was put in place and implemented, changes were made, but the contract was never updated. Recently, Ravenna's begun to do and look at some different things. They've added some additional housing near the end of this line, and so they've had to change how they operate their system. And in doing so, they've come to us and asked us to try and change a couple things on our side, which we were completely fine with, because we do believe that there's more economics of collaboration if we work together. One of the most important things that we're working on right now, and you have in front of you a memorandum of understanding of things that we were going to look at. That was going to be us on our side taking a look at the existing line itself, being able to actually close the valves at Powder Mill. We operate those valves for the emergency control. Typically, they were open all the way to about 200 feet from our plant, and that's where we actually closed it. We're now closing it at Powder Mill. We're making sure that the water within that line has the chlorine levels to consider it and make it potable, so we don't lose that, so that if we would have to in an emergency situation send it to Ravenna, we can. On the same side, Ravenna is also doing and monitoring those same things. Our goal is to do this for 6 months, so we're going to take this through June, and in that process, we'll have a couple meetings to go through the entire agreement, because there are several things in there that they didn't do, never did, didn't want to do, because it wasn't really conducive to the operations of both plants. So with that being said, I wanted to be able to bring to you guys this memorandum of understanding to have an opportunity to look at it. The biggest thing is it's really just a work in progress, because if we find glitches in the things that have been suggested, we're going to work around those till we find the right solution so that it's conducive for both. So that's why we're here before you. This did go before Ravenna's council, so I felt that it was only fair that you guys also be brought into the fold.
Questions for Melanie? Heidi?
Maybe for the benefit of the newer people on council, has this emergency line ever been utilized?
Oh, absolutely. Most recently in the Mill Fire, and we have several firemen here who can contest, we did have to open that up, and it was our estimation. Oh my gosh, I think we took probably 6 million gallons of water from Ravenna. And it was very paramount that we had that. Was grateful that we were able to open it and put that water into our system. There were two times where we actually completely lost the water within Fairchild's Tower. And thank goodness both the chief at the time and the utility manager, Gary Levagetta, were communicating very clearly so that Gary could get them to slow down utilizing that water till we could get that tower closed and we didn't actually collapse those lines. So again, kudos to the fire department for doing such a great job with what they had. And thank goodness we did have this emergency connect. Other than that, typically what happens was about every 2 weeks, we actually sent about 250,000 gallons of water to Ravenna to keep that line alive and active with water. Recently, it was about a year ago, we stopped doing that. Again, Ravenna changed some of their operations and asked us if we could stop doing that. And so we did do that. And that's when we started taking all last summer and into this winter, the chlorine samples at the powder mill site to ensure that if that emergency did occur, that water would still be potable and clean water. We're still in compliance with our EPA permits for this as well, and we'll continue to make sure that all of the operations that we put into place will meet those standards.
Thank you.
Further questions for Melanie? Oh, thanks, Melanie. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We will be back probably mid to late summer with that contractual agreement again, because that is something we do want both councils to be able to have an opportunity to review and approve.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll Nick up. And then
I think, Nick, you mentioned you had something. Come on up.
Mine is a little bit more purely internal operational, but I wanted to make you guys aware. We are in the process of every so many years, based on the age of hardware, age of equipment, system processing, you know, how long the vendors will support them for, we update all the 5 different core components of our system. This year happens to be the network equipment itself and the corresponding phone system. So we are just wanting to make you aware that as we do this, we are processing through, and we've been working with each of the department heads in their departments to understand, you know, how do you use the phones? The system originally was kind of put in a more, it was the very first attempt at a network-based phone system, a big update to the city in 2017. So it was kind of more casting a wider blanket. And so this time we're trying to take the effort and go through and work with the department heads, you know, how do you uniquely use it? How do the people that call you do it? So we've taken the opportunity to update some of the auto attendants, some of the call handling, some of the departments now have more direct lines that reach different staffs or different functions. So I just wanted to make you guys aware that as we do this, I guess, you know, pardon our construction, as we move, we're moving slowly. Rather than doing the whole city as was done last time, we actually have the availability this time to move building by building. So it's considerably less disruptive as a whole. So at this point, as of Friday, we will be about halfway through the city. There are only about 4 buildings remaining after Friday. This city hall is scheduled for Friday. So, and again, with that, we are also updating the network equipment that goes behind it. You know, again, just more preventative to make sure that we're staying on top of the systems. You know, this is the system that underlays everything that delivers all of the data to our departments. So we want to make sure that it's maintained well.
So, questions for Nick? Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
Dave? Yeah, I wanted to, I'll pass this out. Robin, can I pass? Take one and pass on. So tonight I just wanted to give you the materials that we're going to talk about in April's committee. And this is the discussion, the financial discussion that's been on the radar and in the budget message for me since probably 23. So 23, 24 was in the budget message, kind of the waving a little bit of a flag. We got issues coming, and but we don't know how we're going to fix them yet. And then this last year, council asked the staff to identify the most critical needs, and they started presenting them. So we had the fire chief one month, we had police chief 1 month, and we had Melanie 1 month. They're probably the hardest hit with the staffing shortfalls. We've also heard some of this is previous council, some of this is new council. So it's always hard to speak to you guys because I don't know which one to speak to. But there have been more and more conversations about parks and recreation, and they've been levy supported on their own. Yes, they share our systems, they share the phone system, they share the budget systems, but they are funding themselves through their levies. And she doesn't look like she has a lot of gray hair, but her levies have caused her some to age exponentially because they don't rise with the tide. And so she's gradually getting tighter, 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 and trying to figure out how can she make ends meet. And not even that's even before we get to the whole conversation of the master plan and all those wonderful projects and all those wonderful projects that Jim Bowling is getting everybody excited about in the downtown. Like, we could do this, we could do this. A lot of those are parks and rec related. So at some point, you're going to ask me, well, how can we finance some of this stuff? All of that stuff, we've been meeting, like I said, for over a year, the main staff people, Rhonda and I, and this is sort of the summation. I know it's not short, and I apologize for that. But a lot of it's just, as I said to Tracy before the meeting, is a lot of math in this, because fundamentally we're talking math issues. We have more demand on our services, less staff on our services. We're a relatively lower resource tax community, based community. We have the highest poverty rate amongst our peer cities. We're second lowest median income of all our peer cities. So we don't have a deep pockets to reach into and figure this all out. But I think we've got some stuff that we can talk to you about. So it's too much to digest this in one night. So I wanted to just continue to ease you into this water. Take it home, read it at your leisure, digest it, hopefully. We will kind of go through it in April, and that's not going to be your only bite at the apple. My expectation is to take as long as this needs to talk through it. We've tried to put some options in here, and most of what you see in the back half of this report is sort of the data behind the front couple pages. How we got to our suggested options is sort of articulated in the pages that fall behind. So I just wanted you to have it in your hands. I wanted to give you a little preamble, and we'll talk more next month.
Thanks, Dave. Further, any questions? Okay, thanks. Okay, now we're going to go to community development. Chair Schaefer.
And I see her coming up to the podium. Yes, we'll open with Community Development Block Grant, CDBG.
Yes, and for this one, I'm going to introduce our Zoning and Grants Coordinator, Kaylin Cyrus, and she's going to go through the projects that we received applications for this year.
Hi.
So every year, the City of Kent receives funding from HUD for the Community Development Block Grant Program. In January, we issued the request for proposals, and we got those back in February. So what I'm presenting to you today is our funding and project recommendations. These won't be approved until May after we've had our public hearing and 30-day public comment period. So program year 2026 is the second year of our five-year consolidated plan that started last year and will end in 2029. In the five-year consolidated plan, the City of Kent outlined three objectives. They are targeted infrastructure improvements in low to moderate areas, housing programs to provide safe and decent housing to low to moderate individuals, and to provide appropriate supportive services to low to moderate individuals. This year, we received a total of six project proposals, totaling $304,000 in requested funding. Our recommendations are based off of the allocation we received in 2025, which was $265,000. But we don't know what funding we'll receive in 2026, so these recommendations could always change. So the first project is from the City of Kent Engineering Department for the Elm Street reconstruction. This will be a full depth reconstruction of Elm Street from Dodge Street to South Water Street. Construction is expected to start in 2027, and this is the third year of funding that we will have for this. The recommended funding is $157,000. The second project, we always have this, is Community Action Council of Portage County's Furnace Inspection and Targeted Furnace Replacement Program. We always have a lot of individuals and families in the City of Kent reach out about this. It allows for furnace inspections and replacements of furnace and hot water tanks for low to moderate families. Our funding recommendation is $43,000. Next is Access Family Services. They're requesting funding for window replacement at the Freedom House and Miller House. The Freedom House and Miller House are one connected building. So they're requesting funding for a complete window replacement. The Freedom House provides transitional housing for veterans, and the Miller House is an emergency homeless shelter for families and individuals. The Ohio Small Business Development Center requested funding for their small business counseling, which provides one-on-one counseling and other supportive services and workshops and trainings for low to moderate income residents. Access Family Services also requested funding for their homeless shelter services at the Miller House. Oh, I forgot to say our recommended funding for the window replacement is $15,000. The recommended funding for the small business counseling is $3,000. And then for the homeless shelter services, this helps pay for shelter nights for individuals. And the recommended funding for this is $15,000. The next is for the City of Kent Community Development Department. We recently received our funding through the Community Housing Impact and Preservation Program from the state of Ohio. So we use this funding to do owner-occupied housing rehabs for low to moderate income individuals. So we're recommending $6,000 in funding to help supplement the costs that come with that. And then we also have administration costs for the Community Development Department. So this helps cover ads that have to go out in the paper, training, opportunities that we may want to take, and it also helps cover some of the staff. So the recommended funding for that is $2,000. And then we always fund fair housing services through a fair housing consultant. This helps residents in the City of Kent that are facing any fair housing issues, they can call them. Fair housing will look into it and see if there was any issues, look at tenant landlord counseling, which is especially important in a city like Kent that has so many student rentals. So we're recommending $24,000 in funding for this. Staff would like to note that the Akron-Canton Regional Food Bank did request $5,000 in funding, but due to the federal reporting requirements that are required for CDBG, we have recommended not funding the Akron-Canton Food Bank through the CDBG funds, and we have sent them the request for proposals for the City of Kent's social service grant programs.
Are there any questions from the council? Are there any questions from the audience or community? And we do need a motion, is that correct?
May I ask a question, Heidi? May I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
So some of the services provided are intended for residents of Kent, but they're, the, you know, like, but actually located outside of the city. And so do we have a good, so for instance, fair housing consultant is outside of the city, but you know, it's intended to benefit the residents of Kent. So
we are required as recipients of community development block grant funds to provide fair housing services. And those fair housing services need to be provided by an agency that's recognized by HUD. So Fair Housing Contact Service is the agency we use, but the funding is dedicated strictly to services, fair housing services for basically residents in Kent.
Okay, same for the HVAC installs and everything.
CAC is located in Ravenna, but they provide documentation that they are residents here in the City of Kent.
Great, thank you.
Which is one of the reasons why we couldn't fund the food bank, because yeah, they do not have that kind of tracking mechanism that we could say that the food was specifically going to a Kent resident.
Okay, thank you.
So I have a question now. So the motion would not be to approve the projects and amounts. That would be held for the May meeting.
Correct.
So what would you need tonight?
If anyone had any issues or concerns with any of the projects, they could let us know. But if they accept the staff's recommendations for funding, we actually don't even know our funding allocation yet from HUD. So at this point, we're just looking for approval of the proposals as submitted with approval with the actual legislative authority occurring in May.
Okay. Does anyone want to make that motion?
Move to approve with emergency.
Is there a second? Second. Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any against? Same sign. Motion passes. All right. And we have Haymaker Farmers Market sublease renewal.
Yes, this is an annual item. Many of you know it's a housekeeping item. For those of you that are new to council, I did want to explain that the area where the farmers market is actually owned by the Wheeling Lake Erie Railroad, and we actually lease that from them for public parking. And through that process, we then sublease it to the farmers market. So every year that sublease is approved, it is contingent upon approval by the railroad. And for a dollar paid to the city, the farmers market uses it from the first Saturday in April through the last Saturday in November.
Sorry. Any questions?
Our sublease? No, we have a sublease. Well, it's basically we have the sublease we have with Wheeling Lake Erie Railroad is a multi-year lease that has built in increases. The next increase in it is, I believe, next year, and then there's a 5-year. But the city pays for that, and we just charge the farmers market a dollar for the sublease for the time they use it. But it is the actual lease that we have with the railroad is paid through the Community Development Department budget.
Any other questions? Any questions or comments from the audience? All right. Would someone like to make a motion to about the sublease?
I'll make the motion.
Second.
To clause on that.
With emergency?
With emergency.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any against? Same sign. Motion passes. All right, now we are going to this PKO Chapter 1337 Flood Damage Control Amendments.
Yes, thank you. In March of 2025, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, which is the state agency responsible for managing floodplain in the state of Ohio for the federal agency FEMA, monitored the City of Kent's floodplain program. Our program passed. I will add that we do not have a significant number of floodplain permits that are issued. We only had actually 3 such issued in the course of a 12-year period. Typically, those don't involve structures. But through that process, they do go through our regulations, and they noted that some our regulations, which were adopted in 2009, my first year here, and it was Gene. Remember Gene doing it, have been needed some updates. FEMA made some changes, added new definitions, added erosion. And in addition to that, the city updated its flood insurance rate maps, which we call the firm maps, in 2017, and the old regulations were still referencing the prior year ones. So everything that's in here is specifically modeled after what the Ohio Department of Natural Resources requires us to do. Just so those of you that are not familiar, cities are required to adopt floodplain management regulations in order for anyone that may be located in a flood area to be eligible for the federal insurance. We do not have any of those currently in place right now, but this is there in case it is needed. There was significant questions that arose when the map was updated in 2017 because some homeowners' parcels had portions of the parcels located in it, but no new structures were moved in. A couple other items that were an update in here was there was new terminology that added some specificity and clarity, which is actually very helpful to us. And one of the challenges we've had in the Community Development Department is that the chief building official under historically in the city has always been designated as the floodplain administrator, but actually all our floodplain permits typically deal with non-structured areas. So we did make a change, and through discussion with ODNR, they designated the community development director or their designee. We actually have a floodplain administrator, licensed senior engineer up in Jim's department, who actually did all the firm maps for us. And she has been a great advisory to me as we've gone through the few permits that we have. As I said, we don't get too many, but by adding the word designee, we can have Corey, our senior engineer, do that for us. And I do plan on having another staff member in the community development department do it as well. So we can have 2. So we always have a backup.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, just a question.
Yes,
and is this a movement that it's going to the community development director, or generally in other cities, is it always the chief building official, or is it kind of whatever works for cities?
It's whatever works for the city, because there are communities where the chief building official does get, ours did, Bob did get the floodplain certification. He was just never comfortable with it. Chief building officials deal with buildings. Yeah. Right. And so when you're deal, when we had to deal with, we had issues on Aaron Drive, for example, where there was changes in grading. I actually went out there and it was working with Corey. It was Corey and I that dealt with getting that situated in terms of the permit. It just logically for Kent, because of the where our areas are, it makes more sense to have the engineer that deals with the firm maps and the stormwater management for the city be that designated person to work for us. Mm-hmm. But I also didn't want to be in a situation where if Corey wasn't available to us, we didn't have someone. So that's why I think we're going to have a second one designated within our department. It's not a high demand job, but it is one that we do need to have on the record.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any questions from the community or comments? All right, back to council. I would assume if we make we would be making a motion with the emergency.
Please, thank you.
I'll move to authorize with emergency.
Any comments? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any against say same sign. It passes with emergency, right? All right. And do we have Eric coming up or?
Eric is recovering from strep, so I am pinch hitting for him. Okay. He has young children. He seems to catch everything that goes through the schools.
All right. Well, Bridget's going to be discussing the Celebrate Kent awards.
Yes. And this is informational only. I did want to start with that. Typically, the Celebrate Kent is funded by council every year. It's in the community development budget under the economic development line. And the funding recommendations are made and a report is given to council. But because we have some new members, we just felt it was good to actually come up and present it. So the Celebrate Kent program has been around for many years. Dan Smith, technically our first economic development director, created the program to draw interest and to get crowds to come into downtown Kent even before we did our downtown redevelopment. So we've been funding that every year. It's been $15,000 and it's used to support entities that organize and bring events. The funding does look at how many participants are brought in, and I believe it was about 4 years ago that one former council person, Gwen Rosenberg, suggested that we do a small set aside for support of programs that support diversity. And that actually has supported some Juneteenth programming and some neighborhood initiatives in the South End. So this year in the applications, we basically received $18,000 in requests. But we also only received a fund request for the South End Juneteenth Committee for their block party. So we were able to use 800 of that normal set aside for the diversity to apply towards the programming downtown. So we had 13,800 to allocate towards that. And you can see in the spreadsheet, the breakout, we could not fund everybody at what their request was, but we did look at basically the reported attendees and the percentages of change of reduction in their ask was proportionate to that. I did want to highlight for Standing Rock Cultural Arts, they have two events that actually the DICE event, there was 250 left on the so they actually only used 550 of their $800 allocation last year. So that was one of the reasons why some of that recommendation came down a little bit. I can answer any questions about this. This has been a hugely successful program. And as many of you know, these events, Beetle Fest, American Roots, Blues Fest, it brings a lot of business and visitors to our downtown.
Any questions from council? Yes, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Bridget. Curious, were there applicants that did not get awarded?
No, everyone was funded. We had one new one. We typically receive the same funding request each year from the different entities like Crooked River and Steen Rec. Kent State, for the first time, submitted for their Flashes First Friday. So that was a new entry into the program. We actually disseminated to a large list via email, and then we also promoted in the paper in a display ad. So it's not buried in the legal, it's like kind of a display ad, and we get word out on it. So if you know somebody that might be interested in applying for next year, I'll make sure that Eric sends that out and includes all of council on it in case you want to pass that along to someone.
As a follow-up, can you share more about the considerations for the applicants besides potential crowd size? Are there, you know, is need factored in, for example?
Typically what we give is de minimis compared to what most of these events, you know, run. For example, Beetle Fest and stuff. So we are a small portion of the budget, but it does help offset some of the costs. Many of these are also run by volunteers, so it helps then expand how much they can put towards the supplies. None of it is going towards administrative costs. These are all going to costs associated with bands, a lot of the bands, they're expensive, equipment setup, and all of those types of activities that bring large events to the town. Advertising is another one. We do allow them to, because obviously promoting that, any of you that listen to 91.3, the summit, a lot of these events are on that. So, you know, it's, those are usually a donation to get that your event announced. So that kind of thing. They use funding for that as well to get the word out.
Thank you.
You know, reading the intent is to promote economic development by supporting events like this. And so beyond the attendance at the events that is on our spreadsheet, is there any, has there been economic analysis, like impact of the events? Do we have a good number on when there's 500 people that attend an event, approximately this kind of economic?
We don't have a direct correlation, but we have done numerous basically studies with, in partnership with Main Street Kent, and also through our parking studies, of what events actually have the most people coming into the town. And then we get positive feedback from all of our small businesses with regards. And actually, they also tell us which events haven't resulted in them getting business in the door. Sometimes the nature of a business, the beneficiary, for example, events like these might benefit bars and restaurants because they're coming in just to experience a concert or a nightlife, not so much for retail. So, but some of the retail do actually stay open because they get people that are walking by. So we've had all positive feedback for these events, but I don't think we've done a survey of the businesses on these events for probably about 3 years. So I can have Eric make sure that he coordinates that and we get some feedback, but it's all been positive.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
What else? Anybody from the audience wish to speak? All right. Thank you very much, Bridget.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, finance, Chair Chelko is not here, so it's Chair Tipton.
Yep, I'm up. And first up is Melanie Baker presenting on NOPEC Community Event Sponsorship Grant 2026 in the packet.
Thank you. I'm going to take just a little step back too, because as Bridget said, we have some new people. So just to help you understand what NOPEC is, what they do for us, and how we're so blessed to be able to accept these grants. NOPEC is known as the Northeast Ohio Public Energy Council. It was founded in 2000, and it took on its first communities in 2001. Kent was one of those founding communities. They currently serve over 240 communities in Ohio, from as far west as Tiffin, all the way out to Cleveland, to Conneaut, to the east, and then all the way south to Canton, Massillon, and even as far south as Lexington, Ohio. So they have a very large area in Northeast Ohio. What this does is it allows them to use bulk buying techniques in order to purchase competitive priced electricity and natural gas for the supply of our customers. With that, as a part of their fees that they absorb and what they are gaining when they bid these out, funds do come in. They are able to put those into accounts that garner money, and then they make these grants available to our communities. So the first one that you have before us is one that we've been receiving, I believe, every year since I've been here. It is in the form of $2,000, and it is given to the City of Kent based on our per capita for both utilities. So we get the max amount for that. We have used this sponsorship for several activities, but this year, between myself, the city manager, and the mayor, we've decided that we'd like to recommend to council to be able to give this to the Heritage Festival in July. This $2,000 will go to them to help offset their accounts and their expenditures. The three things that are required for this to be given to an event is that it is free to the public, it is open to all residents of the community, and it can provide an engagement opportunity for NOPEC to connect with their community residents. All three of those are met with this event. I respectfully request that council approve the acceptance of this $2,000 award to the Heritage Festival with the emergency clause and allow us to award that.
Thank you. Are there any questions from council? Hearing none, are there any questions or comments from the audience? All right. Is there a motion?
I'll move to approve with emergency.
Second.
Seconded. Any further comments? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstain? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you. Next up is, again, NOPEC, Energized Community Grant 2026. Melanie, again, thank you.
Thank you. So we've actually been receiving this grant since 2018. It varies from year to year, but this year we've been awarded, again, based on the number of customers we have both in our electric and gas programs. And the dollar amount that's received this year is $49,965. In the past, we have used these funds to take and do work at a water reclamation facility, a streetlight audit for energy efficiency, the HVAC unit at the Fire Station 1 was replaced last summer, and then we've also been able to install new energy efficient door openers at the SAC. We use these very often throughout the year, but what I am requesting is that council approve this acceptance of this grant with the emergency to allow us to place the dollars in escrow with NOPEC until such a time a project meeting the criteria of the grant is found and the monies can be used. I'd like to mention that DePeyster, 319 DePeyster, there may be some application of this money there as far as the energy efficiency, whether it be for the water heaters, furnace, and or we do have to do some electrical upgrades in there. So this would be a fund that we would be able to utilize that money.
Thank you. Does council have any questions?
Simple question. You say what a streetlight audit is?
So what we had them do, so there's a debate between LED and which is more energy efficient but can be harsh, versus the standard high pressure sodium. Thank you, Jim. So we did have an audit of all of our street lights, and that was, oh my gosh, 6 years ago, it's been a while. And what we were able to determine was how much it would cost to change out the ballasts, whether or not there was an energy efficiency that would be seen, how long that would be seen for, and then to debate the idea of what we would call a very cold light versus the very warm light, the high pressure sodium. At the time that the audit was done, there wasn't a lot of variation. It was either really cold or warm. So, but we did have that done so that we would have that available to us for use.
What was the result of the audit?
So,
I'm asking you to dig.
Yeah, no, we have done nothing. And the main reason is that it's very cost, I would say prohibitive at this particular point to change all of those lights and or ballasts out. The ballasts themselves are most expensive, really kind of an expensive part of the light, but the lights themselves can also be expensive. So we haven't done anything of that nature. We've had two other major projects that they've been working on with the roads. So it's certainly within our tool chest to begin looking at, but it isn't something that's taken a priority for us.
Thank you.
Tracy.
Now, aren't the lights, you're talking about the lights for the city, whether you would change them out or not?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't those the responsibility of the electric company?
So we do have some that is what used to be called the old ESIP plan, and we just reviewed these. It's a new acronym, and I apologize that I don't have that for you. We still have those here, and those are operated by Ohio Edison, but we also have lights that are, for instance, and Jim, you can help me on this, East Main Street, the downtown lights, most of downtown, all of those lights were lights that we installed and that we are required to maintain. So those would be the type of lights that we took a look at. Thank you. That was a good point.
Ready?
Yeah. I think this is a really great idea to put the money aside. I'm just wondering, you know, I have seen some light replacement grants, for example. This could really benefit as long as it says some kind of an energy usage. It could be like local match for a grant that suddenly comes up that we can then draw this funding from.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It can be used singularly on its own, or it could be used for matching funds as well.
Thank you.
Any further questions? I do have one. Is there a deadline to spend if we do put it in escrow?
There is. It's usually 2 years out. Three now. It was 2 years, but it's now 3 years. Rhonda keeps a very good check on that.
Great.
So she's already trying to spend this money, and I'm like, slow down. All right.
No further questions from the council. Any questions or comments from the audience? Hearing none. Is there a motion?
Motion to accept the grant to place the dollars in escrow with emergency.
With emergency, thanks. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any further comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed or abstain? Hearing none, it passes. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
And next up is Rhonda. And on the budget amendments, go ahead.
Thank you. Tonight, I'm just before you to ask for council's approval for another budget amendment request. It's roughly $850,000.
So, and that's it, because we don't need to go line by line, right?
No,
because everybody has it. I did notice that they're all increases.
Yes.
Do we ever have decreases?
Yes.
All right. Sorry, I said that tongue.
More towards the end of the year.
Okay, good. Thank you. Any questions on any of the proposed amendments? Yes.
I have a question. It's kind of, is this another topic that's going to come up about the appropriations request for economic development revolving loan fund? Or is that?
That was already discussed last month with the coping machine.
Okay.
Anything further on that, Heidi? Or that's it? Okay.
No, just
any further questions on any of the proposed amendments? Hearing none, turning to the audience, any questions or comments? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
Move to approve with emergency.
We have a second.
Second.
Any further comment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstain? Hearing none. Thank you, Rhonda.
Streets and sidewalk and utilities, Chair Wallach.
Thank you. In another map that I thought would be bigger. So I apologize. I am here before you guys tonight as we are looking to amend codified ordinance 353.02 parking regulation authorization. It was brought to TENS, which is known as Traffic Engineering and Safety Committee, in December of 2025, that streets of Nathan Drive and Phillip Drive off of Fairchild and Adrian Avenue had some improperly placed no parking signs. It was determined that all the streets in that area should be reviewed for the safety of the neighborhood and that no parking signage should be verified of its location on the appropriate side of the street and that it is corresponding with the city codified ordinances. Further investigation, the following was found and documented. Adrian Avenue. The street is marked correctly as per code, but could use more signs and better placement. We've begun the process of putting those up as weather permitted and will continue through this spring. Bruce Drive. The street is marked correctly as per code. Cottage Gate. The street is marked correctly as per code. However, there are two no parking signs in somewhat offside spaces. We believe this is at the request of the development. One location is on the cul-de-sac in the area where there is no parking spaces located. This sign here is to deter people from parking on the inside of the cul-de-sac. It did appear that they must have had some issues with that. The second location is a sign is located where there's a pull off for the mail delivery. Without the sign, I believe that people who might be visiting would be tempted to use that as a place to park and pull in. Nathan Drive, no parking on the south side. This parking designation must be changed to no parking on the north side. The hydrants are located on that side. On Nicholas Drive, the street is marked correctly as per code, and Phillip Drive also must have the designation changed from the north side to the, or from the south side to the north side. So we respectfully request that council allow for the language to be changed as follows. Nathan Drive, no parking on the south side will be changed to no parking on the north side. Phillip Drive, no parking on the south side will be changed to no parking on the north side. I respectfully request that you approve this with the emergency and allow us to make these changes in the codified ordinances and move the signs correctly.
Questions from council? Audience, comments or questions from the audience? Back to council.
I'll move to approve with emergency.
Anybody have a second? Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, passes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. I'd like to move an executive session to consider the appointment, employment, dismissal, discipline, promotion, demotion, or compensation of a public employee or official.
Seconded by Chris. Roll call, Kathy.
Do we need a motion to exclude? So when we get there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Clapper?
Yes.
Mr. Drager?
Yeah.
Mr. Hook?
Yes.
Ms. Schaefer-Bish?
Yes.
Mr. Tipton?
Yes.
Mr. Turner? Ms. Wallach?
Yes.
Ms. Wesley?
Yes.
Ms. Chelko is asked to be excused.
Move excuse.
Second. It's in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?